This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the FinTech podcast series brought to you by Charles Russell Speechlease. My name is Christina Fleming, and I'm a lawyer in the commercial and technology team here at CRS, and I also head up the firm's FinTech campaign. The idea behind the podcast series is to take a look at some of the key trends and hot topics in the FinTech sector, and impart some of the knowledge from specialists across the firm, which they've built up from advising clients in this sector for many years, and also take a look at some of the more technical legal considerations when doing business in an FS context and when utilising some of these more innovative technologies. I can't help but feel, as I'm sure to many of you, that this is a really exciting time for financial services, particularly in the UK. We're hearing of digital transformation projects occurring across the board, and from challenger banks to digital assets and cryptocurrency, the list goes on. The evolution of today's technology is transforming the financial services industry and creating new and innovative products and ways of doing business. By way of introduction and to start off the podcast series, we'll be taking a look in this episode at what we had identified as some of the top fintech predictions for 2020 and how this is likely to change as a result of COVID-19. But let me just pause there for a second while to let you know a bit more about what's coming up in our fintech podcasts. We'll have lawyers from our financial regulatory team looking at the changing regulatory landscape as a result of COVID-19 and how the virus could change the FS industry, with FinTech taking a key role, and also the significance of the senior manager's certification regime in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. And then my colleagues Mark Bailey, Chris Ingram and myself will be doing a podcast on the FCA, PRA and Bank of England consultation on operational resilience and the ramifications this will have in a technology procurement context. And I'll also just mention some separate crypto-focused podcasts we have in the pipeline. In light of the increasing significance of cryptocurrency and digital assets, we'll have partners from our private client team running various podcasts looking at the tax issues around holding cryptocurrency, particularly for non-doms and trustees, and also the legal issues for individuals around crypto assets from a succession and security perspective, as well as going forward, how the tax authorities will look to go about regulating and taxing what are by design decentralized currencies, with others in the pipeline. Okay, so turning back to FinTech trends in 2020, I'm joined by my colleague, Jessica Arrell. Hi, Jess.
Thanks, Christina. Hi, all. I'm Jessica Arrell, and I am a senior associate in the firm's financial services department. I specialise in advising firms on the financial services regulations surrounding their businesses, which includes those firms operating within the FinTech space.
So back in January, as is convention at the start of the year, we published an article looking at the trend of increasing regulation in the fintech space, and we took a look at what is or what was coming up in the year ahead for 2020. Since then, obviously, the business landscape across the globe has taken a dramatic shift following the outbreak of COVID-19, and we're now faced with a new frontier in the form of lockdown, working from home, and also transacting, communicating, and socialising digitally at a level unimaginable at the start of 2020 when we first started thinking about the year ahead. So what's in store now, and will COVID accelerate these fintech trends? One of the themes we looked at last year was an increasing trend of asset managers going digital and the launch of online platforms. Jess, do you want to tell us a bit about this trend?
Sure. So the backdrop to this was that, of course, capturing a millennial client base is becoming increasingly important to the asset management industry as their existing clients grow older. Statistics show that the millennial age group presents an underestimated source of revenue. So it's really for them working out how to capture this age group. Attractive app-based technology is obviously key, as this age group are pretty addicted to their phones. So I think we're likely to see an acceleration of these digital projects in the coronavirus world, with everyone forced to do things online now rather than in person.
Would it be also helpful to mention here that regulation of platforms is something that the FCA has been looking at recently?
Yes, that's right. So in March last year, the FCA released their investment platforms market study final report. The findings were that a lot of people are using these investment platforms to allow them to invest on an execution only basis, for example, in things like retail investment funds. Some users of these platforms are, however, finding it difficult to switch because of things like time, complexity and cost. There can be difficulties switching because maybe you need to switch fund unit classes or custodian, and most platforms and or the funds themselves will have an exit charge. So in December last year, the FCA published new rules, which effectively make it easier for people to switch platforms where their investments are available on both the those platforms, allowing the investor to remain invested throughout the switching process. Otherwise, issues might arise. For example, they have to come out of their investment, which crystallizes a gain or a loss. So this will all come into effect this summer. The FCA is also consulting on abolishing exit fees this summer. So in summary, the FCA is trying to increase competition in this area to make it easier and cost-free for people to switch between investment platforms.
And these success of online platforms, I think, is reflective of the fact that businesses with a strong digital offering will really grow the most market share coming out of COVID-19, with more products that are now being sold digitally than ever before. And I think perhaps in some ways, as a result of the pandemic, everyone has been forced to start using online services and to sort of educate themselves in communicating in a new way. And, you know, we're unlikely to pedal back to where we were before. And those businesses that will really benefit are those communicating seamlessly with their customers online and with a good user experience. So we're probably likely to see more investment in tech platforms than we have in the past. And that brings us on to a similar trend in banking, which could go further to fuel the ongoing competition between the incumbent and the challenger banks. And I think this point on strong digital offering is also a key issue here, both for consumer-facing challenger banks as well as from a B2B perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. To start with, it's probably worth mentioning that COVID has meant a lot of funding to SMEs has dried up, as banks are becoming tentative with regard to the lending to these SMEs right now. Non-bank lenders, however, could be a good source of funding during this period. They may be able to take riskier lending decisions right now or offer more competitive rates.
And of course, good lending decisions will still be important. But I guess as long as they're still making these good decisions, then fintechs can typically move faster and maybe more adaptive and are not perhaps scarred by the situation that was unfolding post-2008.
Yeah, absolutely. Fintechs are probably quite appealing right now with their apps and online presence. User experience via apps is really at the heart of what they're about. The other thing to mention here is that there is some discussion around who will emerge stronger from this coronavirus crisis. The incumbent banks, who are trusted and experienced historically, or the challengers. As I mentioned earlier, people are being forced online now rather than being able to go into a branch. Maybe the purely online offerings of the challenger banks, which are very user-friendly from the technology perspective, will win customers right now. With banks not being able to offer things such as good savings rates or attractive loans at the moment to individuals, perhaps it will be the technology offered that draws in customers. That being said, maybe the traditional banks can compete here by launching some really attractive app-based banking.
And I guess a great example of fintech's focus on customer experience in the COVID-19 environment is perhaps Starling Bank. So Starling got this new product, I think they're calling it a Connect card, which essentially allows customers to give a copy of the card to a trusted person to buy essential items on their behalf. And there's a spending limit of £200. So it's designed to help those customers who are self-isolating and who have had to rely on friends, family or neighbours for support at this time. And I think it's really impressive how quickly we're to get this product off the ground. So this shows you how reactive fintechs have been at this time and with customers really at the heart of what they do.
Yeah, it's such a clever idea. And it's quite amazing how they've moved so quickly to launch the card. I guess it's a good time for fintechs to take stock and think about launching new products to win customers, perhaps taking advantage of a customer base wanting something a bit different from their existing financial service providers. Even though fintechs could be short on funding themselves at the minute, they may not have as much baggage, perhaps, as the traditional banks, who might have huge rental property portfolios of bank branches sitting empty right now. And things like working flexibly are really part of that fintech culture. So it means that they could be poised to take advantage of the environment.
Yeah, so definitely an interesting time for the fintechs.
That's right.
Okay, great. So next on our agenda, and another key trend we looked at, is open banking and the move by big tech into finance. We have noted that in 2020, we expect to see continued and more coordinated scrutiny of these moves by big tech regulators in finance, data and competition spheres.
Yeah, so open banking, or the Payment Services Directive 2, or PSD2 for short, as it is known in Europe, came into effect in early 2018. Among many other things, it allows third-party tech companies and other fintechs to access banks' customers' data as long as they have customers' permission. What it has meant, in effect, is that big tech companies have been able to use the data to get in on the financial services action. You will see companies like Amazon now are lending to businesses because they can use open banking to make more informed lending decisions.
And I guess it's this access to banks' customer data via the use of APIs, which has been allowing third-party technology companies to see information such as repayment histories and income data from other online marketplaces, and use this to design better management apps for customers, or in the case of Amazon, use it to make more informed lending decisions. And we've also seen examples of open banking being used to create new CDD products or AML solutions. But query in light of COVID-19, whether there'll in fact be more involvement by big tech in finance. And you know, we're already seeing the likes of Apple and Google collaborating with governments on virus tracing technology. And this may be a good time for them to make more focused inroads into financial services, with regulatory attention perhaps being diverted elsewhere. And I think the role of big data is likely to really play a key part in innovation in financial services. It's the tech companies that provide the vital components to create new products and innovations. You know, they have the data, the networks, and the technology that financial services need to evolve. And data really becomes everything when you're trying to manage products online. You know, big tech are really the masters of these technologies.
Yeah, I mean, actually, these big tech companies seem to be doing quite well in this time of recession. I think it has been reported recently that these companies in the big tech circle, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, etc., are reasserting their dominance. I've read that the five biggest constituents of the S&P 500, who are Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Google's parent, and Facebook, account for a fifth of the index's market capitalization. And I believe that's sort of a modern day record in terms of concentration. So there's a general theme of these big tech companies using their omnipotence to diversify into financial services.
Yeah, and if we look at the success of fintechs like Klarna, which is a sort of point of sale consumer lender, you can see how it's an obvious opportunity for big tech to offer similar kind of services. You know, platforms such as Amazon could offer their own payment gateway lending solution. But it's this ability of big tech to branch into financial services in this way that means people also questioning whether bank data sharing should be extended to other sectors and allow banks to get data out to big tech. I think this is maybe in line with the Bank of England's vision of open finance and the extension of existing data sharing through open banking to much wider data sets, such as data held by utilities companies, search engines, social media, or even public sources such as Companies House.
Yeah, and linking back to fintechs, this could allow them to continue to diversify their offerings with greater access to data, helping them to maybe offer loans to consumers, even mortgages, subject, of course, to the right lending permissions with the regulators. In some jurisdictions, even now, you will see these online platforms where a fintech acts as sort of a one-stop shop for all types of things, insurance, loans, bank accounts, etc.
Yes, and I think we can see examples of this platform model working well in other jurisdictions. I think in South Korea, one of the most successful challenger banks called Kakao also has a messaging app used by 93% of the population. So, you know, everybody's using the Kakao bank for finance, but also using KakaoTalk on their smartphones. And it's a, you know, really good example of this platform style approach to services.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So the final point we are going to touch on is the role of digital payments and currency innovations, such as the Facebook Libra coin. We had predicted that digital payments were set to be a key area of focus in 2020, following the Treasury's 2019 review of the payments landscape. The Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee has also recently agreed a set of principles to guide its assessment of how prudential regulation and supervision should adjust to fast-moving developments in payments activities, as it sees it as a key point for innovation.
Yeah, and so we have regulators around the globe considering their response to the regulation of stablecoins as projects similar to what Facebook's Libra coin was trying to achieve continues as a key global trend in the evolution of payment systems. This idea of a central bank digital currency is being increasingly mooted worldwide, and it's sort of seen as a way to help improve payment systems and efficiency in cross-border transactions. Back in January, the Bank of England and the European Central Bank announced that they had teamed up with other major central banks as to assess the case for launching their own digital currencies, as well as looking at the potential cross-border interoperability of such technologies. And we also had in March the Bank of England publishing a discussion paper on central bank digital currency and looking at the opportunities and challenges that this would present.
Yeah, so do you think this Libra experiment has put the brakes on the idea of a global digital currency?
I think the feeling is actually that You know, the fact we already have the Bank of England talking about this suggests that the idea of a central bank issued digital currency, you know, won't go away. The need to move money around the globe more efficiently is still something that will be a continuing pressure, albeit that it might not happen at the same pace if governments and regulators are distracted with dealing with the aftermath of COVID-19. But I think the feeling is that it's something that's definitely on its way. Okay, and that's it. That's all from us for now. Certainly lots going on, and I'm sure we'll see many more changes and innovations happening across the fintech sector as we start to emerge out of lockdown in the new post-COVID-19 world. And Jess, I think you'll be touching on some of these themes in later podcasts.
Yes, that's right. We'll be looking at how regulated firms in the UK are having to adapt in this crisis, and even regulation itself. For example, we have seen the FCA and PRA senior managers regime having to be modified temporarily to account for people potentially being unable to carry on their role, maybe as they are furloughed or off sick. But more on that in our upcoming podcast.
And it goes without saying that if any of the topics mentioned are of a particular interest to you, or you'd like to find out more or continue the conversation, please do get in touch. Contact details are available on our website. And thank you for listening, and we look forward to our next podcast.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.